Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 63 of Season 7 of Movie on Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Lisa Leahy of the Rabbit Hole Podcast Network. Welcome back to the show, Lisa.
Hey, hey, thanks for having me.
Happy Wednesday.
Yes, happy Wednesday to you.
Give you a high five.
Yes. I love it.
All right. So minute 63 begins with Zeus starting to take things a little bit too personally and ends with John and Zeus high-fiving one another. So yesterday we ended things with John and Zeus being somewhere in the middle of their 5 minutes, trying to figure out how to deal with getting this bomb deactivated by placing 4 gallons of water in a 5-gallon jug.
Yes. They have to be precise.
Have to be very precise. And at the end of yesterday's minute, they started arguing with one another because neither one of them believed that the other one knows what's going on. And then Zeus starts to think something and he starts accusing John. And basically, he starts saying, "You were going to call me a weren't you?" And he goes, "No, I wasn't." "Yes, you were. What were you going to call me?" He goes, "How's that? You got some fucking problems with me because I'm white, Zeus. Is that it, huh? Have I oppressed you? Have I oppressed your people somehow? I'll tell you what your problem is. You don't like me because you're a racist." "What?" "You're a racist. You don't like me because I'm white." And this is a line that was quoted so much in the trailer and stuff like that, where he goes, "I don't like you because you're going to get me killed."
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, this is a great back and forth between the two of them. You know,
I think it's funny that Samuel Jackson stops him, because the end of yesterday, like that last minute, he's about to say like mother effer, and I'm like, this is such a Samuel Jackson word, but because it's a PG-13 Die Hard, we can't say the word.
No.
And it's just like,
this is not a PG, this is not a PG-13 movie. This
isn't
is
it? Oh, no, you're right, the next one is PG-13.
That's yeah, right. So this no, is R-rated.
You're right that he was about to say it.
They say a lot of things here that you can say in an R-rated movie. How's that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, there isn't really an issue about that. No. So basically, as they're having this now, I like this argument and because I try to keep as far away from politics here as possible. But looking at this argument between the two of them, 29 years later, you can still see people having the same argument.
You can.
With the same results, meaning that at the same time, everyone's right and everyone's wrong. Or no one's right and no one's wrong, that type of thing. It just, you know.
It's a little stickier than that for me, though.
Okay, I can understand that. You know, I mean, obviously there are words that are being used here that you don't use in normal conversation. Obviously, Samuel L. Jackson and Zeus and, you know, he's a character who will say it often, you know, in a lot of his movies and stuff like that. You know, I only use it when I'm quoting here directly.
Oh, of course.
I won't, you know, there's no reason to use it beyond that. But if I'm quoting directly, I will use it, even though no one has heard me say it because it's been beeped out. But that's fine, because I just want, you know, the dialogue to go as it's supposed to go. But
it's also the second time that the word comes up, because you have it earlier on with the sandwich board.
Well, you have
situation.
You have it written on the sandwich boards, correct?
Right.
Yes. And it is mentioned. Zeus does mention it. He says out loud, you know, that you're crazy to walk around with that. You know, that's
yes.
I completely understand that. But you know, you know what? I think it's sad that even after almost 30 years, the conversation is still the same. Not much has changed. But then again, you can go back even further and say, okay, in 1995, when this movie came out, you know, for 150 years, the conversation hasn't changed.
Well, what gets me is this idea of this like reverse racism stuff, and this idea of like where it gets sticky for me. Like I said, like the last 10 years or so, I've done a number of readings and that sort of thing. And, you know, the term racist, it gets blurred in with prejudiced, right? Like you call somebody racist because they're prejudiced against the somebody's skin. But the idea of being racist is, by many of the definitions I've come across, the definition of somebody who has benefited from the holding down of a different race, right? So the idea of like, the idea of Zeus can't be racist because he has not benefited from the holding down of somebody who's white. You know what I mean? Like that hasn't happened. So
okay, but from that same argument, John can't be racist either, just because he would use a word.
What do you mean?
Because of the fact that, I mean, Zeus thinks he's going to use a word. He doesn't use the word.
He wasn't going. I don't believe that he was going
That's
to
right.
use the word.
I don't believe
use
so
the
either.
Word mother effer.
No, I believe that he was going to use the word in it. Right. You know, I don't have a problem with it. You know, I think that
I just
that
don't
goes
like,
along.
What makes that uncomfortable for me is when he calls Zeus a racist. It's like, you don't like me because I'm white. That's not what it means. He's prejudiced. He's not racist. But that's going to be a can of worms. So it's just my take on the whole thing.
Okay. I understand. And
it's not a movie that conversation, you're not going to get that in a movie now without an outcry.
Oh, for sure.
You are not getting
that
conversation.
The question then you can ask was this conversation appropriate in 1995?
Yes, I think it was, because the 90s had so much of this outcry. So you had people calling each other on their BS a lot more in the 90s. So I think, was it appropriate? I mean, hindsight is 2020. So you're going to look back at things and go, ooh, they shouldn't have said that. But at the time, drawing attention to it was a thing. So I think that it fits the time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with you. I agree with you because I think that they use it here to add a little bit of humor into the movie. Because on the one hand, you know, the part of the mismatch between the two of these two guys, I mean, who have amazing chemistry together, is that on the one hand, John, you know, just wants to curse out Zeus, and he just wants to call him.
Right.
But Zeus automatically assumes
the N word is
John
coming.
Wants something
right.
else. I mean, there's. We talked about this going through the script a few months ago, where when John was trying to convince Zeus as to why he should join in, Zeus basically says, well, I hope they kill a lot of white people.
Right.
With the bomb. I mean, again,
yeah,
that's just
there's
the
an
script.
Anger there. Not, there's definitely an anger there. Yep.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We can understand the anger. I would understand it more if this was a Spike Lee movie. You know.
True. True. I mean, maybe this is McTiernan's way of addressing it. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to wait and see how it's addressed in the script. You know,
yeah,
we shall get there. And in the middle of this whole conversation, this whole argument that Zeus has basically started, Zeus then immediately stops. And then he goes, how much time? And he looks down at the timer and goes, oh, shit. And then he turns to John and goes, we got less than a minute. Throw this thing away.
Yeah. I love throw this away. That's the best answer. It's like, get rid of it. Throw it.
Yes. Because it's going to go really far.
Yes, it is going to go very far. And they've got like they're going to get away in time.
That's right. And then John shows that he is clear minded here and goes, no, we can't take it off from there. It'll detonate. Right. Just wait. Wait a second. I got it. Exactly 2 gallons in here. Right. You know, he picks up the jug.
Yep.
The 3 gallon jug. There's exactly 2 gallons in here. Right. And he goes, right. Leaving exactly 1 gallon of empty space, right? And he goes, yeah,
right.
A full 5 gallons here, right? Right. If you pour 1 gallon out of the 5 gallons into there, we have exactly
4 gallons.
And then I love how in unison they both say 4 gallons in there. Yes.
Yes.
Pour it in there. Come on. Don't spill it. Good. Exactly 4 gallons.
Yes.
You know, and they're ecstatic. And it's, you know, it's great how they give us a fast explanation as to how this works, but it's still a great explanation.
It works.
Of how they, yeah, completely works with the whole thing.
It still made me lose 20 minutes of the movie. I say 20
minutes. I
understand
that. I understand that.
But I got it. I did get it, and I went, okay, I can get back to this movie now.
Yeah.
I love a good brain teaser.
And then they both realize that, wait a second, they need to actually put it down.
Yes.
You know, they're so ecstatic. They go,
you need to get it out. Yes.
Yeah. Then he goes, put it on the thing. Get it down there. And he goes, oh,
put it on the thing is my best, is the best part.
That's right. And then they put it down on the scale, and we see that there are 5 seconds left to spare as it all moves along. And then they each give each other a high five.
Yep. They've earned that high five.
Yes. You know, I love how they have these tropes, you know, in movies where basically, you know, a timer goes down and you don't have that much time left. You know, and it's always a joke because, you know, you have like blinking lights and stuff like that, you know, but how much time, you know, do they really have in order to, you know, to get something done and stuff like that?
Yep.
So, yeah.
It's a good trope. It's exciting. It makes a movie exciting.
Yes, that's true. And so I decided to look around and see, you know, like what are some of the best movies to do it. And I found one that has just a top 6. I know you complained the other day that we were dealing with
these random numbers.
Random numbers, yes. But you know, we have a top 6 of talking about what's missing.
Okay.
of these type of things. So, okay. Well, first of all, can you think of any big movies that have this type of trope with a time bomb about to go off that the characters need to quickly defuse?
Oh, well, it happens in Speed, but I guess it's not the main focus. Mission Impossible? I don't know. I'm not going to come up with these quickly, so you probably need to just read me the list.
Okay, so number 6, we have Lethal Weapon 3.
I would never have come up with that in a million years.
Where in the very first scene, they're trying to deal with the time bomb in the car, which they end up, you know, they save the cat, which is something cat. That... There you go. Is something that you know, Lisa would be very happy about.
Yes. I don't like when animals get harmed in movies. It upsets me.
Okay.
Sadly, I'm okay with people getting hurt in movies and horror movies. I can adjust to that. But when it's animals, it upsets me. It's okay. Disturbing. I'm sorry.
Okay. I completely understand that. That makes a lot of sense. Okay. The next one is, as you said, Speed. Speed does have...
Oh, good. See, I did get one.
Yes.
Very proud of me.
We have Speed on that list. The next one is Die Hard with a Vengeance. Surprisingly, I'm not sure exactly where in the movie they deal with this, but there is a point where there's a time bomb that is about to go off somehow. I don't know. Number 3 on this list is Star Trek III: The Search for Spock.
Never would have gotten. I would have gotten Lethal Weapon 3 first.
Okay, when they're about to blow up the Enterprise, and you have the Klingons, you know, the main Klingon played by Christopher Lloyd, you know, he hears the computer counting down, but doesn't understand English or basic, whatever you want to call it, at the time. And he screams as it's a... Then you have in the movie Event Horizon.
I don't like that movie. I'm a bad horror fan. People love that movie all over the place. I don't like it.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of it either.
I knew I liked you. Know,
then obviously you have Spaceballs.
Oh, of course. That's a great movie.
Yes. It fits to be number 1 on this list where, yay, you know, have a nice day.
Amazing. Oh, it's so good. I love that film.
So yeah, that's the top 6 that I found here. Now let's talk a little bit about High Five. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you know other terms for the phrase High Five? Or other phrases that you would use for High Five?
No. I don't.
Okay. I mean, you can say Give Me Five or Up.
Oh,
top.
Okay.
You know, up these top. Are different
okay,
types
okay, that's
of,
what you mean. Yeah, yeah, no, you've just, I think you've basically, but see, Give Me Five isn't going to be a high five. It's going to be a low five. I don't think people say Give Me Five and do Up High. Like, I don't know. That's weird. Up High I got. But that's interesting. Gimme five is usually not a high five. That's something different.
Okay. All right, that's fair.
One of these days you might find a list I don't argue with. I feel like this is going to be a challenge.
But that's part of the whole fun here, isn't it?
I'm so glad. Do other people argue with the lists too?
Sure they do. Sure.
Oh, thank goodness.
Okay, so the phrase has been used as a noun in the Oxford English Dictionary since 1980.
Yep.
And as a verb since 81.
Yep.
And it's related to the slang give me five, which is a request for some form of handshake. Yes. Variations include slap me five, slip me five, give me some skin, five referring to the number of fingers on the hand. Mm-hmm. The high five originated from the low five, which has been part of African-American culture since the 1920s.
Oh, that's cool.
The exact transition from low five to a high is unknown, though many theories exist about its inception. Magic Johnson once suggested that he invented the high five at Michigan State, presumably in the late 70s. Other people have suggested that it originated in women's volleyball in the 1960s.
Really? That's fascinating.
Yeah. Now, for many decades, people thought the origin came from it was a baseball origin, that you had Dusty Baker and Glenn Burke of the L.A. Dodgers who gave each other a high five on the last day of the regular season after Dusty Baker hit a home run off of Astros pitcher J.R. Richard. It was Baker's 30th home run, making the Dodgers the first team in history to have four hitters with at least 30 home runs in a single season.
Fun fact. I like it.
Yeah. But again, they think that that's where it came from, but they found out later on that it wasn't. You know, there's another, there's a whole bunch of origin stories about it. There's an origin story claiming that it was by comedy writers. That
really?
Two comedy writers and founders of the National High Five Day claimed that a late 1970s and early 80s basketball player from the Murray State University had invented the gesture. They also concocted an elaborate and involved story about this player as a young boy learning the gesture from his father. But in a 2013 ESPN article, the pair admitted that it had been a publicity stunt. And basically the two had scoured college basketball rosters to plug in the name.
That's so crazy.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's fun trivia. I've never heard any of that.
Yeah. You see, you found something that you
like
there.
I like that. I do like it.
then people started with the air fives.
What, when they missed?
Where people don't actually touch. You just need a line of sight.
Gotcha.
This was even before COVID. That people were doing that. It was
More
like it was a wireless high five.
Yeah. Well, especially if you're like across the room from each other.
That's right. And it was a pun on Wi-Fi. You know, it's a wireless computer technology.
That's cool. I like that.
Yes. Now, there is a National High Five Day. Do you know that?
I believe it. I didn't know it, but there's a national something day for everything. So
that's true. So it is the third Thursday in April.
Okay.
It began in 2002. People on that day participate in what are known as high five-a-thons to raise money for charity to see how many high fives you can do before
that
you have to
stop. That sounds so tedious.
Yeah.
I will not be participating.
I would agree.
Oh my goodness.
Right. Okay. So that's basically the way this minute ends, because again, we had a lot of conversations between the characters along the way. So it was a quicker minute from the dialogue perspective, I guess you could say.
It is. Well, do we want to talk about how to do it?
How to do what? High five?
How to solve the riddle.
Sure. Why not? Why don't you do that?
I mean,
I totally forgot about the fact that that's what they were doing. You know, we've been talking
about this. This is the whole reason for me being on this week.
I know that. I know that. But I'm saying we were starting to talk about high five. So I just forgot about the fact that supposed to talk about. Go ahead, Lisa. You can explain
it. Because it's weird, right?
So you're the teacher do it.
in the moment when he has it and they figure it out, he's got 2 gallons in the 3 gallon jug. And you look at it and you go, how the hell do you get 2 gallons in the 3 gallon jug? Like, how did this work? And so this is what made me crazy, because not only did I have to solve the riddle, I had to figure out why he randomly had 2 gallons in this 3 gallon jug. So
okay.
What I got to eventually was, if you fill up, because they start by filling up the 5 gallon jug all the way to the top. And then what you do is you pour into the 3 gallon jug until it's full. So they've got 3 gallons in the 3 gallon jug and now 2 gallons left in the 5. Step one, you empty the 3 gallon jug. So now you've got 0 and 2. So you pour the 2 gallons from the 5 into the 3, which is where they are in this moment. They've got 2 gallons in the 3 gallon jug and now the empty 5 gallon jug. With me so far?
Yeah, of course. Same.
Okay. So now what you do is you fill that 5 gallon jug all the way up again. So now you've got 5 in the 5 gallon jug and 2 in the 3 gallon jug. And this is what they say, because they have 1 gallon left of space. So by pouring from the 5 into the 3 and filling the 3, now you have 3 in the 3 and 4 in the 5. And that's how they do it.
Oh, wow. Okay. Sounds good. Again, I'm assuming that these jugs are marked specifically, you know, where the, you know, where each gallon is marked off. So, you know, when they pour it in, they can see that it'll hit the line that says 4 gallons.
Well, you just got to fill it to the top.
Right. No, but is sometimes if you have a.
If they had a jug that literally just had a line that said 4 gallons, this would not be anywhere near as tense a moment.
That is true. That's very
so
true.
That would be boring. We can't
okay,
have that.
But on
we
the
need
other hand,
the actual
but on the
map.
Other hand, I understand that. But on the other hand, how do they know it's exact? Because when you have a 2 liter bottle, okay,
right,
is the 2 liters, does that include the air in the bottleneck?
Yeah, I don't know. But either way, with Simon setting this up, I'm going to assume that they're doing what he wants. And plus it works. So
yeah,
either way, if it didn't work, they weren't going to care because they'd be dead.
That's true. They would be dead. That is true. I would agree with that. Okay, sounds good. So would you like to talk about the script at this point?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so the script, first of all, the conversation between John and Zeus about racism happens in the script before they actually reach the park. They're starting to talk on their way to the park. I'm going to go back 2 weeks because okay. Zeus says something else that we talked about when they were on their way there. So Zeus basically said, Zeus and John are having a conversation, and Zeus wants to know who John McClane is. Okay, they were talking about the article in the paper and stuff like that. So Zeus asks John, who's John McClane? Yep. And McClane goes, he's 40 years old. He's a cop. He's divorced because he's a cop. And somebody's trying to kill him. And then looks at him and goes, who's Zeus Carver? He owns an appliance shop. He's divorced because none of your fucking business. And somebody's trying to kill him. And somebody's trying to kill him because he saved some white cop's ass. And then it says, this is the point which we talk about here, where... Then it says they eye each other. Then McClane says, you think for 5 minutes we can get around this black-white thing? Just says, sure, fine. Let's get around it. What the fuck does that mean? It means you've got a beef with me because I'm white. You want to tell me why? If you have to ask the question, you won't understand the answer. They eye each other. Then they talk at once, the pace and intensity increasing. Let's get something straight. Yeah, you're good at that. I don't own any slaves. Oh, man, you're not going to shovel this bullshit on me. My ancestors, to my knowledge, didn't own any slaves. You think I haven't heard that before? I don't give a rat's left testicle if you're black or white or green. Let me get something straight. Or fucking purple. And then Zeus just looks at him and goes, suck my dick, McClane. And that's the way that conversation goes. So it's very different between the script and the movie, the way that they do it. And I like the way they do it in the movie a little better. I think it does fit, as we talked about earlier, this minute about the fact that it fits more in with what's going on in society in the 90s than the other one.
Yes.
You know, so I think that makes sense. Now, the way that the rest of this minute continues here, you know, with them talking about the water, filling it up, right?
Yes.
So it continues. It goes, the detonator's timer counts down, 618, 617, 616. McLean says, I thought you were good at this stuff. Shut up. We pour the 3 gallons into the 5 gallon. We did that. Wait a minute. I'm onto something. Zeus quickly grabs the 5 gallon jug. He submerses it. It quickly fills with water. McLean, anxious, kneels next to him. What are you doing? What I'm probably doing is getting typhus and herpes from the... He holds up the jug. It's full. The 5 gallon jug filled to the top. Exactly 5 gallons. Right? Right. Give me the three gallon. McLean hands Zeus the 3 gallon jug. Zeus pours the 5 gallon jug into the 3 gallon jug until the water comes to the brim. Zeus holds up the 5 gallon jug. It's 2/3 full. There were 5 gallons in here, but I poured off exactly 3 gallons into that jug, leaving me exactly 2 gallons in the five, correct? Yeah, right. Okay, watch. Zeus empties the 3 gallon jug into the fountain. He picks up the 5 gallon jug and pours exactly 2 gallons into the 3 gallon jug. During this, passing people have begun to notice McLean and Zeus get increasingly strange looks. Zeus says, exactly 2 gallons in the 3 gallon, right? How much time? McLean looks at the timer. 4 minutes, 30 seconds. Okay. We fill the five back up, submerses the 5 gallon jug, and then Zeus pauses. To the rest of it. I don't know the rest of it. What? It was you who said don't say anything unless you know. I thought you knew. Oh, Christ. McLean grabs the handle of the 3 gallon jug, filled with exactly 2 gallons, trying to yank it from Zeus. Zeus holds on. They stand there, each with a handle. They pull back and forth. Let's go. I'm starting over. They both look down at the timer. 4 minutes, 3:59, 3:58. Zeus says, we can't start over, McLean. They stand there, each pulling on the jug handle. And now, out of the corner of his eye, McLean sees a 5-year-old boy is next to the Samsonite briefcase. He is picking it up by the handles. He smiles, laughs. He's cute. McLean's eyes twitch with terror. Oh, my God. Zeus follows McLean's eyes to the jungle gym. McLean screams at the little boy's mother, get away from that. And the scale's timer reads 31, 30, 29. McLean and Zeus are still trying to wrest the jug from each other. Both are furious, insistent. God damn it. Let go or I'll kick your ass back to Harlem. You, McLean catches himself. An icy pause. Go ahead. Say it.
There it is.
That's right. I wasn't going to say that. So maybe. Looking at the timer. 20 seconds. Zeus looks at the jungle gym panicking. This. Let's get rid of this bomb. But McLean isn't listening. I've got it. What? You do? McLean holds up the 3 gallon jug. Exactly 2 gallons, right? McLean sets the 3 gallon jug down. He pulls the 5 gallon jug out of the pond and exactly 5 in here, right? So if we pour this into that until it comes to the top, McLean pours the full 5 gallon jug into the 3 gallon jug until the water brims to the top. We're left with exactly 4 gallons in a 5 gallon jug. Zeus looks on, thunderstruck. You did it. They stand there triumphant. Then they remember the digital timer now reading 5, 4, 3. McLean puts the 5 gallon on the scale. The timer freezes at 1 second. McLean and Zeus sink to their knees, hyperventilating. So I love it too, but I think they do it better in the movie.
Absolutely.
Not to mention
Zeus is 29 in that script. Absolutely not.
Yeah. No.
I love that they've got these two guys essentially on the same level. You know, like two guys who have lived and they've seen some stuff, you know, like they're at each other's throats. Like if it were McLean and some 29-year-old, like there'd be a status issue. You know, the status issue here is, you know, the race issue. But I think if it was just an older versus younger, it wouldn't have been as effective.
Correct. I agree with you on that. All right. So every Wednesday, we have a segment called Jesus Hump Day, where my guests will give their top 5 Samuel L. Jackson performances. So what have you got for us, Lisa? Start with your number five.
So my number five. Your way up. My number 5 Samuel L. Jackson performance. Some people may think I'm cheating, but it's one of the greatest performances this man has ever put out into the world. And it is his audio reading of the book Go the F to Sleep. And I will die on that hill because I don't care if it's a movie performance or an audio reading. But if you have not heard Samuel Jackson reading Go the F to Sleep, you please need to. And you need to gift this book to all of your friends who are having children because it's essential reading. Number 4 is the film Unbreakable, M. Night Shyamalan's second film, in which he plays what he calls Mr. Glass. Could have been a contender, and I'm sure somebody brought it up for the trilogy Tuesday, but unfortunately, I'm not a fan of the movie Glass. I don't think he did a good job with it at all. I thought there was a lot of silly talking exposition, and he sort of ruined the effect of those characters for me. So I love the first film. I'm going to stick with the first film. Again, Bruce Willis and Samuel Jackson together. So clearly I have a type. Number three is Sphere from the late 90s. And I love Samuel Jackson's character in this film. I love that, you know, he gets freaked out from reading 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea and the whole situation where, you know, the book turns up blank because he couldn't read any further and they get attacked by a giant squid. I love that whole sequence. I think it's a fun movie. It's not a great movie. It's not a quality movie, but it's fun and I enjoy the hell out of it. Then my number two, I know this is going to be Jay's number one, but it's my number two, Jurassic Park, because he is a supporting character and he's amazing. And I do love the hold on to your butts line. I think that's amazing. I love that he doesn't really sound like himself because we're used to Samuel Jackson in his angry yelling phase. And in Jurassic Park, you know, he's just a tech and he's just kind of mumbling to himself, trying to get through Dennis Nedry's stupid system. And I just kind of love how calm he generally is. I think it's an interesting role for him. My favorite, though, is as Danny Roman in The Negotiator. And I think this is a film a lot of people have forgotten. I hope it shows up on some people's lists. But The Negotiator is just a sort of forgotten gem from the late 90s. Unfortunately, Kevin Spacey is going to tarnish the fact that anybody wants to watch it. Because he is the actual, you know, he's one of the titular negotiators. But Danny Roman is a negotiator who has been framed and he has to, you know, find out his way. And so he takes people hostage so that he can get people to actually listen to him. And it's just such a cool thriller. So that's my number one.
Okay. Just so you know, you were not the only person to have it on your list. There are two other people so far who've had it on their list. And one of them actually has it in their top spot like you.
I love it. I knew people are good for this. Good people on your lists, on your podcast.
Yes. All right, Lisa, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Lisa Leahy?
Absolutely. You can find Lisa Leahy on Rabbit Hole Podcast Network. You can check me out on The Gift of Horror, where Jason Soto and I are gifting each other random horror films based on whatever the subgenre of the day may be. And you can also catch me on Pictures and Conversations, which is a Rabbit Hole Podcast book club we release on the 20th of every month.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, or you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. You can also send me an email to movierobminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
When Johnny comes marching home again, hoorah, hoorah, we'll give him a hearty welcome then, hoorah! The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.